This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Play the play on the show.
It is Danny and Gallant, conference championship weekend. We've determined that Russ is the middle child in this matchup. You have the youngins who are going to take on each other in the nightcap when the Kansas City Chiefs face the Buffalo Bills, two guys that are still kind of in the early stages of their career. The older fellas, Rodgers versus Brady, in their first playoff matchup ever, that's going to get things going. And caught in between is Russell Wilson, who's not quite as old or as experienced as Brady and Rodgers, not as young and promising as Allen and Mahomes.
He's Jan, to make a somewhat dated reference from the Brady Bunch. I would be frustrated if I were Russell Wilson watching this weekend.
It's a bummer, right? You're not part of this conversation.
Right. And he's in this conversation, but he's not a part of the championship conversation. It's a tricky place to be. And with Rodgers and Brady, of course, the legacies that those two have put together as far as active quarterbacks now, especially we think Drew Brees is going to be on his way out after this season, second to none in the league. But also, I mean, Patrick Mahomes is going to have, if he wins on Sunday, just as many career accomplishments as Russell Wilson. And almost all of the playoff victories, six, he would have an MVP, two Super Bowl appearances, one Super Bowl victory already, leading an NFL season in touchdown passes. With Josh Allen, it's trickier because this is a guy that has, as you have laid out, Danny, and as I have in the past, at the very least, seen a propensity to make mistakes. And a big performance against Kansas City in a conference championship game, that might be the final domino to fall and perhaps changing people's perceptions of him, right? And even for you.
Yes, I think that's right. He's played great this year. And in all seriousness, the improvement in his accuracy is something that I did not think anyone was going to be capable of. When he came into the league, he has an incredible arm. Like he can really throw it. And he's faster than people think, and he's a big dude. Like he's built. But I looked at his completion percentage. I'm like, is he going to get more accurate in the pros?
Right.
I didn't think that would generally happen. Right now, one of the questions about Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson did not have an extraordinarily high completion percentage in college. That's one of the questions that remains about him. Josh Allen has significantly improved that this season. He's taken a huge step forward, and he's flushed out some of the mistakes. He'll still make crazy throws. He'll still do things that, if you're a Bills fan, you just hope they don't rise up and bite you in the butt. But he's had an incredible season. He had a better season than Russell Wilson. I don't think he's a better quarterback right now than Russell Wilson.
But he is making such unbelievable strides.
Yeah.
With that long gait that he has. And with a team that has the weapons that Buffalo has, you bring him Stephon Diggs and you see just a transformation that can take place overnight. Maybe even similar to the way over the last 2 years, Russ with DK Metcalf has taken, I think, a step forward as far as his overall production, definitely. But I think firmly cemented his place for those who follow the NFL, but maybe aren't here, as one of the best guys in the game. But man, it would be frustrating for me seeing all of these teams playing, and I couldn't even get past the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, it's a huge look, this is the most disappointing postseason that Russ has had. The Seahawks have had with Russ is there. I mean, it's just true. That's not some sort of huge. They've been to the playoffs in 8 of his 9 seasons. They've won a playoff game in what? It would be 6 of those 9 seasons now. He's had a lot of success. This is a bummer. You won 12 games and you lost at home to a team that you had beaten 3 weeks earlier. It's a bummer. I do feel like this weekend, we're going to talk about the comparisons between the 5 quarterbacks. I think that Russ is going to look at the situations. I think he's going to find himself spending time looking at what do these teams do to accentuate the skills and give themselves the best chance to win with their quarterbacks.
Right now, you would have to argue that Kansas City has the most, at least from a just quarterback-only perspective, and I would imagine that Russ is most jealous of all of the weapons that Patrick Mahomes has to work with. And I know that we've had this conversation before, as have many others living in the greater Seattle area. If Russell Wilson had Patrick Mahomes' weapons, where would Russell Wilson be?
I think I've come to the conclusion. I think Russ has plenty of weapons. Are they as good? Are they as good as Kansas City's receivers top to bottom? No, I think Travis Kelce is one of the best receiving tight ends in the entire league, and Tyreek Hill is the best deep threat. DK Metcalf's in that conversation. I think that for a long time, people have wondered, would Russ be able to execute what Mahomes does in Mahomes' offense? Before that, it was, if you put Russ in New Orleans' offense, would he put up the numbers that Drew Brees does? I've kind of come to the conclusion that I don't think that's necessarily the case. It's not even a, hey, Pete Carroll will never do that, so we shouldn't talk about it. I don't know if you give Russ that same volume of opportunities or have that same percentage of the offense weigh on him, that he would put up the same things.
You know what? I disagree with that. This is a guy who always talks about himself as a point guard. And take a look at not just Kansas City. Look at all the other situations this weekend. Green Bay is the one situation that you look at and you say, you know what? There are some similarities to Seattle there. You have a really great wide receiver at the top of it. You have a pretty good running back. Maybe the receivers after the fact aren't quite on the same playing field as Tyler Lockett. But Tampa Bay has too many guys. And Buffalo also underratedly has a John Brown and Cole Beasley, who I think are fantastic second and third options. Man, maybe he comes out of this weekend saying it's not just that we need to have an offensive coordinator that picks up the pace. We also need more weapons. And how would that work when you probably need more offensive linemen?
Are there any teams that have two receivers that are better than Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf?
You could make
Tyler
the case
Lockett
of the Bucs.
But their productivity? Tyler Lockett caught 100 passes, and DK Metcalf, I mean, they both set franchise records this season. And I would say that question of, is Russ at his best? They set franchise records in a year where the offensive production tailed off, in which their offense kind of skidded through the second half of the season. I think too much depended on Russ throwing the ball.
I'm with you, too, and they threw the football too much. First option, though, DK Metcalf. Second option, Tyler Lockett. After that, is David Moore a good enough third option? In the first half of the season, I would have said yes. Now I say no. And I bet Russ thinks about that. And the Seahawks love all the talents that David Moore has to work with. David Moore is a very gifted athlete. And you hear them talk about it all the time. Not just as a runner, but in terms of his explosiveness, his speed. But he's very inconsistent. And those other three teams this weekend, I mean, is Antonio Brown the Bucs' third option? I'm not even sure. I really don't even know who their third option is. They have so many.
Well, you've got Scotty Miller, and then you've got, because their top two receivers you would consider to be Godwin and Mike Evans.
Yeah, I think so. And yeah, then you put Rob Gronkowski into the mix too, because all of a sudden Gronk seems to have found the fountain of youth now that he's in shape the second half of the year.
I just see him diving and falling and failing to catch balls and people landing on top of him in ways that look very painful. Can you improve your third receiver, given all the other things you need to do on offense? And Seattle sounds like if they want to run the ball more, you don't need a better third receiver. If you want to run the ball more, and not to say that you would turn one down, but that you can't be spending resources on a third receiver. Freddie Swain and David Moore will have to be able to do, and we'll see if David Moore ends up coming back. But I would think, given what they've laid out, that I don't think it's a matter of, hey, Russ getting more people to throw to this next season.
I'm with you on that front, but I bet he doesn't feel that way. And understandably, in a weekend like this, and there is a part of me that hopes that Aaron Jones has a massive game against this Bucs defense on Sunday to make Russ see, look, when you got help like this, it is better than being these other three situations where it really is going to be quarterback-centric as far as what they do on offense.
I don't want to root for the Packers, Paul.
I don't either.
I don't want to root for the Packers. And that's really because if there was one team that you would want for, if you were considering the impression that it's going to leave on the quarterback, if there was one team that you would want to succeed this weekend, it would be Green Bay to say, hey, the quarterback wasn't necessarily in love with some of the things they did last offseason. In fact, he might have gotten mad or taken it as a sign of the direction things are going. And a year later, he's probably going to win the MVP and might get to a second Super Bowl. That sometimes eating your vegetables and doing something you don't want to do turns out to be best for you.
Right. Look, Green Bay took care of LA. So I think Green Bay's done enough for us.
I don't want to see Aaron Rodgers. I want him to be one ring Rodgers. Like I want him to continue to be one ring Rodgers.
I want that. I also want Tom Brady to add Aaron Rodgers to the list of playoff bodies.
It's hard with Brady because I don't want to see Brady. I'm tired of Brady. Like, there is zero part of me that is rooting for him to, in his post Belichick sort of career, to be able to prove anything wrong. Oh. Like, he's won too much. I'm sick of it.
Well,
I'm
come on, man. Pliability, the DB12 method.
I don't care for Bruce Arians. In general, I'm not as hostile toward him as some of the other people, and specifically Brock and Salk, who definitely Salk dislikes him and calls him a windbag.
I like his Kangol caps.
I get it. But I think I'm rooting for the Bucks over the Packers.
I don't want to
watch the self satisfaction of Aaron Rodgers. I don't want to hear him talking about a beautiful mystery about his future.
The other game, a lot of people like Kansas City. I don't like Kansas City, and it's a shame. I do like Patrick Mahomes. I do like Andy Reid, but I do not want Patrick Mahomes in his fourth season in the NFL to already have better career achievements than Russell Wilson, which he would have if he wins this game. As many Super Bowl appearances, an MVP trophy to his name, all of that jazz. I don't like Tyreek Hill. I don't like Travis Kelce. Tyrann Mathieu annoys me. Frank Clark, not the biggest fan of him either. There are characters on that Chiefs team that make me want them to lose.
You're also obligated as an American to root for the underdog, aren't you? Mm-hmm. Isn't there a rule that if you're not invested in one of the teams, like all things being equal, that you're obligated to root for the underdog?
Usually, yeah. I mean, sometimes I do like to root for establishment just because sometimes there's so much of a groundswell against that team that I'm like, you know what? I'm going to root for them just to be annoying. But yes, for the most part, 100%. And for Buffalo, a team that is playing in a city that has been through, I would say, a lot of sports pain when it comes to those four Super Bowls in a row that you lose. God, that's got to be brutal.
Well, you rooted against Cleveland, though, because you thought that the world needs losers. Does the same apply to Buffalo? That you don't want them to get off the schneid? You want them to bear forever the Scott Norwood miss?
Well, Buffalo's been good before. And there's a cool element to the 90s era of football, where in the AFC East, it was the Dolphins with Marino, and it's the Buffalo Bills with Jim Kelly and all of those great players that they had. Like, Buffalo's been good before. So there's a part of me that actually would enjoy to see a return to history, but you know how it works. As soon as the underdog wins once, they're like, all right, these guys stink. We hate them. And I feel like even for Buffalo, that would be a thing.
It is Danny and Gallant. It's a day, a little bit of sadness. If you're just joining us, Hank Aaron passed away this morning. The guy who I consider, whether it's technically correct or not, the all-time home run king with 755 home runs. Someone who broke that record that was held by Babe Ruth. Went through 25 times he was named an all-star. Never had more than 50 home runs. Never reached 50 home runs in a single season, yet was still able to. As 755. As a fan, I knew him more as a figure within the game than I did as a player. I saw highlights, and but I don't remember him playing. So it's really, he's been sort of this hallmark. I described him as the conscience of baseball for a long time, and kind of presiding over the game with the same dignity with which he played.
100%. I mean, my goodness, to break the record of an iconic white sports athlete in the Deep South and be cheered for it eventually is such an interesting story. And that he was able to be mentally strong enough to deal with all of the unnecessary hate that came because he was a threatening player of a guy who was no longer playing a sport. That he was able to go through that and carry himself the way that he did. It's very cool. And I think Bump made a great point earlier. You don't have to carry yourself that way. Also, the model of consistency, Danny, as you mentioned, never more than 50 home runs. I mean, this is Tom Brady before Tom Brady, well before Tom Brady. This is a guy who was a 25-time All-Star. That number is stupid. 25. How you are able to do that from the start to the end of your career, man, that takes a whole lot. And that guy was a great hitter in addition to being the home run king.
It is Danny Glunt. It's time for us to go around the NFL.
It's time to go around the NFL. Brought to you by Toyota of Puyallup. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Today's an exceptional day.
Conference championship.
Happy Conference Championship Weekend. Happy Friday, everybody. Well, the Seahawks have requested permission to interview Saints quarterback coach Joe Lombardi for their vacant offensive coordinator position.
Let's go! Everybody's excited about that, right? It's a descended from royal football lineage, the grandson of Vince Lombardi.
Played his high father, school ball.
Yeah, played at Seattle Prep, you pointed out. Vince Lombardi Jr., when he was on the Seahawks coaching staff here, he got his start with Jim Mora, a former Seahawks head coach.
Went to the Air Force Academy, something that he shares in common with my dad, who went to the academy for a year. I think that's a little cool, playing for the Falcons. And I guess while he was at the Air Force Academy and in service, he also, at the same time, was doing assistant coaching for Dayton before he ended up eventually moving on with his career. A very interesting career he has had, and called plays with the Detroit Lions as their offensive coordinator over a two-year stretch that did not go so well, but has most recently, for the better part of the last decade, worked with Drew Brees. So very intrigued to see how that would potentially match up.
We've got very little in the way of huge name recognition with the Seahawks. Mm-hmm. I mean, there have been some former head coaches that they've talked to. Gase, Peterson, they'd also talked to, who's the other guy that I'm forgetting? Anthony Lynn, that they've spoken to. And then a number of guys who would be on the more anonymous side of assistant coaches. Pep Hamilton, Joe Lombardi, Kirby Wilson. Be interesting to see what they come out with here.
Do you have a gut feeling as far as if they have already interviewed the guy that they will hire?
I don't know. I want them to hire Pep Hamilton. I think Pep Hamilton makes the most sense.
I'm on the Pep Hamilton train, too. I feel like that is our guy. Maybe we need to make campaigns for him.
Dwayne Haskins has signed a one-year deal with the Steelers after visiting them yesterday.
They actually signed him. Okay. Well, good luck with that.
It's a no-lose proposition for the Steelers. This is the easiest kind of hire, right? You bring the guy in, and you see if he's gotten some sense knocked into him. And if he hasn't, you cut him, no muss, no fuss.
I have a hard time believing that he has learned his lesson, because he just doesn't seem like the kind of guy that would be able to learn a lesson. This last incident was not the first. I mean, there were many.
No, he's been a documented idiot.
And
like I like getting guys on their second job, though. Would you just say it's not worth the time? Because that's the flip side. The flip side of the argument is, hey, no matter how long he's on minding his P's and Q's, you're always going to worry that if he gets into a problem, he's going to revert to being a knucklehead. I'm just not even going to bother. I'm not going to waste my time with this, because I think he'll eventually, one way or the other, break my heart.
The skeptic in me would say no, because I just think about how babied the guy probably was at Ohio State. And going forward to where he is now. Also, you look at another quarterback. I mean, Cardale Jones seems like maybe had some similar issues while he was there, too. I wouldn't, but I get it, especially when you have Ben Roethlisberger, who is barely holding it together.
I would do this every single time. In fact, I would, as a general principle, if a first-round pick washes out somewhere, I would be first in line to get him and say, hey, this guy has talent. And he's a knucklehead. And maybe that is the wake-up call he needed. Because guys do bounce back. There are some guys for whom it clicks.
Jamarcus Russell.
No, he didn't click at all. He's terrible.
All right, but
I would have given him a shot.
You would have given him a shot. How would you have made that work?
What are you going to lose? What would you lose? What do you lose? You lose one of 90 roster spots?
I feel like you know the answer, though, already.
But you haven't worked with him, and maybe people change. People do change.
I don't know. I think those habits, work ethic, you either have them or you don't. I agree with that standpoint of people can change in certain elements of their life. But I feel like those habits that involve work ethic, I think you either have it or you don't.
About Chris Carter. Remember him?
Mm-hmm.
Eagles didn't think he was worth the trouble. Like, just got sick of him and let him go. He goes to Minnesota and becomes a Hall of Famer. It's always best to get the guy after he's had his first wake-up call.
But maybe
let somebody else drop him on his head and see if that wakes him up.
It's a quarterback, though. I think it's different with a quarterback. I feel like you have to hold these guys to a much higher standard than you're holding a wide receiver or somebody else.
For what it's worth, Alex Smith also said, he told NBC Sports Washington, yesterday that Haskins is crazy gifted. He just needs to eliminate distractions. But he did say he is gifted. I mean, this is the guy that did mentor Mahomes. Not saying that Dwayne Haskins is going to become Patrick Mahomes. But Alex Smith did mentor Mahomes. So for what it's worth, I don't know. But yeah.
Would you take a chance on him, DJ?
You guys are all aboard the Haskins train.
Yes.
My God.
Yes, I would. Because he's, 25?
Yeah.
24? Yes.
See what happens.
Yeah,
see if he wakes up.
What do you lose? I would take it. He was a first rounder for a reason. It wasn't just watching that one thing as a first rounder. He was projected to go in the first round by a lot of people. So I would take a chance on him, but of course it would be a high risk, medium reward maybe. Because I don't know, even if he figures it out, how good is he going to be?
You guys must be fans of Default, a band who once sang a song called Wasting My Time, because you would be wasting your time. Lost cause.
The Eagles have hired some dude named Nick Sirianni to be their head coach.
Oh, get it right. Sirianni.
We really, 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 really want Carson Wentz to work. We want Carson Wentz to work so bad. We want him to be a thing so bad that we're going to get the guy who worked for the last coach who was able to reach him in Frank Reich. We gave up. We went and hired the guy that we thought most resembled Frank Reich.
Isn't it strange to look at the Eagles, given the last 20 years, as a dysfunctional franchise? Because for me, it is. This is the first time that I've ever looked at the Philadelphia Eagles and the front office and said, wow, they don't know what the heck they're doing. And it's not like they haven't had bad years over the last 20, but I would say that they're probably, as far as teams that have been consistently good the last 10, 20 years, they're up there. And yikes. That is entirely what they are doing, Danny.
They just want Carson Wentz to work. We really want Carson Wentz to work.
How do you put Jalen Hurts back in the bottle?
He didn't play that well.
That's fair. Right?
He ran really effectively, but the only reason he looked good is because Wentz had been so bad.
Yeah.
It's not like he came in and turned their season around. When he got benched, wasn't he? I think his completion percentage was under 50% in that game that everybody went nuts because Sudfeld came in. Like he'd not been playing particularly well.
It does seem like the team likes him, but how much does that matter? And go back to the Tavares Jackson era here.
Yeah, guys love Tavares Jackson, but he was a guy that could get you to 500. He wasn't going to win games for you, right?
Right.
He was the bus driver. He was the definition of like Bill Parcells bus driver of a quarterback. He'll keep the whole thing on the road, but he's not going to hug the corners. That is around the NFL. We'll have a little more memories of Hank Aaron and also get you set for this weekend's games. Which team does Russell see himself in? That's next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
It is Danny and Gallant. Some sad news from the world of baseball this morning. One of the all-time greats in the game. In my mind, I think in most people's minds, the all-time home run king in baseball. Hank Aaron has passed away at the age of 86 this morning. He had hit 755 home runs in his career. He broke Babe Ruth's mark, which had been 714, with, well, his one of the most famous hits in baseball history. Here it is right here, courtesy of the Braves play-by-play voice at the time.
Sitting on 714. Here's the pitch by Downing. Swinging. There's a drive into left center field. That ball is going to be out of here. It's gone. It's 7:15. There's a new home run champion of all time, and it's Henry Aaron. The fireworks are going. Henry Aaron is coming around third. His teammates are at home plate, and listen to this crowd. This sellout crowd is cheering Henry Aaron, the home run king of all time. 7:15.
Man, goosebumps, and what a moment that was. I obviously wasn't alive for it, but that's one of the most iconic moments in sports. And the moment where a fan ran onto the field to shake his hand. Imagine what's going through Hank Aaron's head in that moment. This guy's just running up to him. This weird dude's running up to him. I'd be a little freaked out.
I'd be completely freaked out.
But the guy shakes his hand instead. It's just an unbelievably awesome, wholesome moment.
Do we have numbers like that anymore in sports? Are there
no.
numbers that stand out? I mean, that was the 715th home run, then you had 755. The number of hits in a season was never as important as the number of home runs in a season. It's certainly changed in baseball. Baseball is a sport that always is defined by numbers, much more so than football, which I think changes according to era. I guess it was a big deal when Sean Alexander set the single season touchdown record in 2005, but it was broken the following year by LaDainian Tomlinson.
I stopped thinking that any statistical accomplishment in football mattered when we've seen three games pause so that Drew Brees could be handed some sort of trophy only to break the same record again because he was going back and forth with Brady on it. That, to me, was a little bit tiresome. But with baseball, it's different because the home run number, first off, with Babe Ruth, he outdid everybody by so much.
Yeah.
If you take a look at the numbers for a season in terms of home runs in...
Oh, you're talking Babe Ruth?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, Babe Ruth was hitting more home runs. If you could compare him to his era, he was hitting more home runs than some teams.
And obviously the sport wasn't integrated then, but there's a reason that that number meant so much, because it represented the Babe, who became this larger-than-life mythological figure in sports that perhaps because of the time and the era and the way that sports were covered then, the legend kind of made... The legend was a little bit bigger than it perhaps would be if this were to happen in 2021. So that number holds for such a long time, and then you not only have a guy break it, but it's a black man breaking it in the South. That number was huge, and for a person that I suppose would, for some, be threatening to them because he's able to put together this athletic accomplishment, it's such an interesting moment in sports history.
40 years earlier, he wouldn't have been able to play in the league.
Right. He'd be in the Negro League 40
years earlier, he wouldn't have gotten the opportunity. So I think there's certainly some extra significance to that. Baseball is more accustomed to records. 56, Joe DiMaggio's hitting streak. Like there are definitive numbers. I guess basketball, you have Wilt Chamberlain's 100-point game and Kobe Bryant, who I think it's the anniversary of his 81-point game today, which I never thought I would ever see someone score that number, especially a wing player like Bryant did. But baseball is the one that's more attuned to it. The home run numbers have been... The steroid era changed them.
Yes.
And it's
even though I enjoyed the steroid era, yeah, it did make that number lose a little bit of its sacred luster.
That... I don't know how badly I feel about that, though. I think that those sort of things are kind of inevitable, and I don't know. I don't feel the same. I do feel that Hank Aaron is the home run champ. I look at Barry Bonds' accomplishments differently. I look at Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire's accomplishments differently than I do Henry Aaron's. And maybe that's a little bit of sort of selective memory or just disqualifying something, but I do see it differently. And as much as I don't consider some of the steroid eras to be the real records for baseball, it's also not like I feel like it's something that should be shunned. I think we should have a separate wing for history. And maybe this gets into, like, there should be, you could provide context to achievements, right?
Yeah.
Like, you could have a wing of the Hall of Fame that, I don't know if it's shaped like a needle or what it is, or if it's like just everything is cartoonishly large in there.
I have an idea. They get two busts. They get one bust of their head when it was not huge, and they have a second one of when their hat size grew by five sizes. So with Barry Bonds, you have the first head and the second head, and you'll be like, oh, now I get it.
Yeah, it's so funny. So I went to high school near the Bay Area, and a couple of my best friends are huge Giants fans. One of them, even his family, has season tickets, and his parents have retired next to the new stadium. There was a time we were sitting there watching it, and I remember Davey, my friend, like pointing out Bonds was sitting in the dugout chewing gum, and he had no hat on, and there was just this muscle, like at the top of his skull, that was just flexing as he chomped on the gum.
Oh,
and we're both sitting there looking at it, and it's, look, for all I know, that is just a muscle that exists in everybody, but I just remember looking at it, and we're like, yeah, something's not right. Like, that's not normal. That doesn't, it looks weird.
Right.
And he did the trajectory of his career, but basically there's a 10-year window that supersized all of the numbers that were most important and most of baseball's benchmarks. DiMaggio's is left, but Aaron's
for
is one streak. That yeah, it doesn't that
and
number
400.
715 meant way more than 755 ended up meaning. Like 715 ended up meaning way more because of what it meant at that moment
yeah.
than what happened when actually Aaron was passed.
Right, yeah. And it is unfortunate that happened the way that it did. You know, especially too when you see a guy like Ken Griffey Jr. who came pretty close here, but of course you think that was wholesome as opposed to all the other guys that were playing.
I don't think
era.
I could take finding out, and I don't think anybody believes it wasn't wholesome.
right.
That would break my heart.
It was.
I love Ken Griffey Jr.
But I, you know, look, I'm not even making accusations, but that is such a weird rabbit hole to go down. But yeah, there's the 56 game hitting streak, and then there's also hitting 400, which is also something
that's true.
But no one's gonna do that again because now baseball's changed, where everyone's just trying to like do. There's all this launch angle crap and no one hits for contact anymore.
The weird thing is with all the emphasis on home runs, we've seen more home runs hit, but we haven't seen players have the single sized seasons that we did that. So while home run records are being set by all players across the league, you're not having guys that are challenged. I mean, that includes the steroid era. Like there's more home runs being hit now per game than were hit in the steroid era. And it's because you have more guys that are hitting home runs, whereas then it was just a relative, not as many, but the guys that were hitting home runs were just cranking out massive amounts.
The guys that were doing it made the game different. And honestly, I enjoyed that era of baseball. And I think all of those guys who played in that era are Hall of Famers, because I think that the game, from an excitement standpoint, has taken a noticeable drop since then. I thought it was... I mean, there were certain guys that you were scared of when they came to the plate, and maybe it's because they were all muscle-bound, V-shaped, looking like they're DC Comics standing in the box. Mark McGwire's torso didn't seem to make sense. It was a triangle, for God's sake. But guys like Manny Ramirez, every single team had that one guy, and that was good, at least. And it made the game better. You know, it's a shame that the record kind of died as a result, but... the era of baseball from, I would say, about 1990, right after the strike and when the Mariners, of course, did what they did in 1995 to about, I don't know, maybe 2005. Like, I think, to me, that's the best era of baseball.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, part of it is because I was a kid and I still love the sport. I don't love that sport anywhere close to the same way that I used to, but when I was a kid, it had this majesty to it that just feels so much different from today. There was actual hatred between teams too, and it's just different. Now, also, I grew up in Boston. That might have been part of it too. There is that inferiority complex with the Yankees, and for them to finally do it, maybe that kind of, I was like, all right, well, it's accomplished. But yeah, that era I think is the best era.
It's certainly been the best era in Seattle. I think that lines up largely with the success of the team.
Yeah.
Anyway, rest in peace, yeah. Hank Aaron. He was 86, passed away this morning. Danny and Gallant, we're going to raise flags. That's coming up next.
From the pocket, and flags everywhere.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant. Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
It is Danny and Gallant. Time to raise flags, make salutes over the course of everything we've gone through over these previous 3 hours. Paul, would you like to go first?
Yeah. Let's start by talking about one of the greatest athletes in American sports history, Hank Aaron, passing away today. It's really sad to see a guy who was, I think, just the epitome of mental toughness in an era where this guy broke a record held by a mythical white athlete, Babe Ruth, the home run record. And he did it while living in the South, not too far removed from the Jim Crow era, constantly receiving death threats, hate mail every single day, and yet, much like Jackie Robinson before him, kept it all to himself. How? I have no idea. And credit to him for being able to do that. And it's not like he needed to do that. We've seen Muhammad Ali do it in an entirely different way. Deal with it how you may. But that he was able to do all of this and eventually break the home run record with 25 straight all-star appearances and just remarkable consistency. It's so cool. And this moment by Vin Scully is why Vin Scully is one of the greatest of all time, too.
One ball and no strike. Aaron waiting. The outfield deep and straight away. Fastball is a high drive into deep left center field. Buckner goes back to the fence. It is gone. What a marvelous moment for baseball. What a marvelous moment for Atlanta and the state of Georgia. What a marvelous moment for the country and the world. A black man is getting a standing ovation in the Deep South for breaking a record of an all-time baseball idol.
There is a part of baseball being America's pastime that is always going to make it, from a historical and from a mythical standpoint, just, I think, hold a place above football and basketball. Maybe not forever, but when you hear a call like that, perfectly executed by Vin Scully, you just know the enormity of that moment. And I'm glad that Vin Scully was on the call for that moment, but also, rest in peace to Hank Aaron, truly a sports legend.
He had to deal with something that no one should have to deal with.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that threat of violence, it's not just the attitudes, people. Like, he dealt with the threats of violence from people who were prejudiced and bigoted. And no one should have to try and perform and strive under those conditions. And he did. Man, it's a really remarkable career and something that's truly inspiring, what he accomplished and the person he was to the game. Baseball, I'm sure, gave him an awful lot in his life, but he gave just as much, and I would argue more, to the game of baseball with both his talent and the perspective that he brought as an elder statesman in the game as well. DJ, what do you got?
I'm raising a flag for, at least I think he's a fan favorite basketball player, Jalen Rose. I don't know how you guys feel about Jalen Rose.
I love Jalen.
Okay, great. I love Jalen Rose. I didn't get to watch him play, especially in the Fab Five era, but it's been well documented. I love Jalen Rose. But today is an anniversary where Jalen gets clowned on a lot because it's the 15-year anniversary of Kobe Bryant scoring 81 points against the Toronto Raptors. And Jalen Rose gets clowned on this day because everyone thinks he was defending the whole time. He only scored 18 points on him, people. I just want to say that. But mainly, I just want to raise a flag for who was a solid NBA player and was one of the greatest college players of all time. And granted, that is the 15-year anniversary of Kobe's 81 points. Gives us an excuse to play this commercial between Kobe and Jalen Rose.
Hey, Cole, how you doing? How retirement treating you?
It's great, man. It's great. Just a little writing, a little investing.
Nice. So I don't know if you saw the thing on Twitter about your statue.
You know, I don't pay attention to that stuff.
Yeah, I figured that. Me either.
A drink, Mr. Bryant?
Yeah, I'll have a vodka martini.
How many olives would you like?
81.
Really?
No, man, I'm just playing. Just two. Joke for him.
So shout out to Jalen Rose, and of course, rest in peace to NBA legend Kobe Bryant.
Man,
Jalen did a series of sort of untold stories. They were animated. It was for the old site Grantland. They're awesome, and there is a story that he tells the story of Kobe Bryant when he gave them 81, and it is freaking. The whole thing is hilarious. There's one where he goes, how many of those were scored on you? He goes, oh, I got a healthy a healthy 20 or so. And he describes that he tried to make Jordan, he made him work on the other end, and he got pulled out of the game because he was trying to post Jordan up. It's very, very good. I'm going to be raising a flag to the NFL. As we watch these championship games, the conference championship games this weekend, we're going to be seeing a number of advertisements, the public service announcements that the NFL has been making about committing to change and talking about different player-sponsored initiatives, and that's great. Good. We also, on Monday, saw them tweet out quotes from Martin Luther King Jr. on the national holiday, and I'm not going to say any of those things are bad, but when you match it up with the actions of NFL owners, it's impossible not to come to the conclusion that they make lip service for causes of justice and racial equality. When qualified black offensive coordinators are so consistently passed over as Eric Bieniemy is being passed over, while white coaches with less experience or less qualifications are constantly getting hired. And the most recent example is Nick Sirianni. And I'm not saying that Nick Sirianni doesn't deserve to be a head coach, but it's impossible to look at the history of what has happened over these past two seasons and not think that the race of different coordinators has played a factor in who ends up getting opportunities. And that's really too bad. And I'll just go back to the NFL says and talks about its commitment to those causes, and the actions of the owners when it comes to hiring head coaches says something entirely different.
It's definitely on the owners to a degree. It's also on coaches doing something that we see in a lot of other industries where they hire guys that they know over people that are most qualified for the job. And sadly, I don't see how you change that. You know, I think that's just something that's always going to be an element that takes place in the coaching ranks. Like, how do you force someone to hire somebody that's ironically more qualified than somebody that they know? It's weird.
I think it ultimately comes down to who the owners are feeling comfortable with and what those decisions are.
Certainly a
making.
Factor. That's true. It's, that's true.
And, man, you see Bruce Arians, he's got two black coordinators that are working for him in this weekend's game, and he is someone who has made a statement, much in the same way Bill Walsh did, about giving opportunities to people who don't necessarily look like you.
There's a woman on his coaching staff, too, as an assistant defensive line coach.
That's going to do it for us for this week. We'll be back with you on Monday. We want to thank Michael Bumpus for joining us in the 8 o'clock hour. Also, thank you to John Clayton for being with us each morning for the morning drive. DJ Wilder keeps things on the straight and narrow, and he is Paul Gallant, who I will call the Dalai Lama, for all of the llamas on his shirt.
And he is Danny O'Neill, and he is sweating over the man, the myth, the legend, Wyoming's own Josh Allen. You ready for that? You ready for the fall on the sword, Danny?
If it happens, I will.
A lot of fun this week, Danny. Coming up next, it's just me. You're a finalist for the Seahawks offensive coordinator gig, sitting outside waiting for your big interview. What are you going to do to sell, first off, Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson, as far as why you deserve that job? We'll talk about that and a whole lot more in the next hour.